Oasis Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, or the Catholic Church. My visitor today is Catherine Gillis. Catherine, a warm welcome and hi to my Te Reo program.
Thank you. How are you?
Catherine Gillis is a trained chartered accountant and an experienced post-abortion counselor. She's also currently the chair of the Diocesan Human Life Committee. Catherine, can you please tell our listeners what the Human Life Committee is about?
Well, the Human Life Committee is part of the Justice and Peace Commission, and we focus on life from conception to natural death. And we are just there to help, because the bishops and the priests often are far too busy, so we do what we can to help them to do this work within our parishes in the diocese.
So you're a group of volunteers?
Yes, we are a group of volunteers, yes. And we're an interesting group because we cover a lot of different fields amongst us, you know, which is great.
Can you name some?
Can I name the people?
Yeah, no,
kind of work.
So yes.
Some of us have been involved in the euthanasia area.
Yes.
Some of us are involved in pregnancy counselling. I do post-abortion counselling and the pregnancy counselling. And some of us are involved in educating people about life issues. So it's a good blend of people.
Yeah,
yeah, we've got a good balance.
And
all ages.
All ages and nationalities.
And nationalities, exactly, we have.
And you meet once a month or every second month?
Once a month, yes, but we do, once a month.
And you are also trained as an accountant. So
yes, I'm a chartered accountant by profession, which I actually still love.
So you've added a training as a counsellor some years ago?
Yes.
What was the reason for this shift?
Well, about 35 years ago, would have been the first time a friend told me about his abortion experience, and he was sobbing his heart out at the time. And in my work as a company accountant, I often had people coming telling me their stories of their abortion, and I just had other friends in my life telling me their stories. And I myself had been a teenage mother, so I had somewhat walked the walk of confusion that you walk when you first hear about an unexpected pregnancy. And I think people knew I wouldn't judge them because I'd, you know, why would I judge them? I could have ended up the same way if I hadn't been lucky and come from a very strong Catholic family who was incredibly supportive. So I was incredibly lucky. But the accountant in me, I could see the trends. I could recognise the trends in all of these people with their stories. And so I started researching and reading as many stories as I could and getting books and things. And then pregnancy counselling services, we started bringing in different programs. We brought in one first from Project Rachel from Wisconsin, and then we brought in a Victims of Choice manual. And I started using these different programs to help people. And it's been an amazingly rewarding journey.
I find it amazing that you, as an accountant, people tell you their stories. Because you think of the accountant as being as a dry job with only figures.
Well, it's a really great balance. When the counselling gets too much for me, I go back to the peace and quiet of numbers.
That you can easily control.
I can easily control them, yes.
For those of you who've just turned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or visit our website or Facebook page at Tengaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Catherine Gillis, and she is currently the chair of the Diocesan Human Life Commission. Human Life Committee, it's called, from a Social Justice and Peace Commission. And Catherine, so you're the convener of this committee, and that is focusing on the protection of life, as you said, from its conception to natural death. Yet you're specialized on post-abortion counseling. This means counseling for women who have already had an abortion. Can you tell us more about your work as a counselor?
Well, very often, in fact, most times, the women who come are actually suicidal. And many of them would have spent years trying to figure out what's at the bottom of their heartache. But we have to understand that it's obviously we want to protect every single life. And that includes all of the human living people and all of those women who have been wounded by abortions and, and their families, their extended families, their grandparents, their parents, the fathers. Those people, they have a need to grieve and society just doesn't allow them that space. And it's remarkable. I've seen women grieving a five-week-old fetus just as if it was a five-year-old child, you know. And they just need time. They need love and they need time and they need to know that that it's important, that their grief is important and their child was important. And it's about bringing them to reconciliation, to forgive all those people who have hurt them, to bring them right through that grief stages. There's a lot of anger often, and bring them through to forgiving them those other people, often the doctors and the medical staff, and then finally forgiving themselves. Because if they don't forgive themselves, they go through life still damaged and hurting. And
so these are women of all ages?
Oh, it's incredible. In fact, since coming to Auckland 7 years ago, it's been even more interesting because I've counselled people from many, many different cultures and all ages, and from one termination up to six. So, and yet that grief is still very much the same. That grief is so deep. And it's very difficult for the families, for the mothers who've not been involved in the abortion decision, to see their daughters' lives ruined, and they know that they would have helped the child if they'd been given the opportunity, you know. And often, the most often thing I hear is, nobody believed in me, nobody said I could do it, nobody believed that they could be a mother, you know, which is an incredible wound to your motherhood, to your essence of womanliness. Yeah.
And they might not have talked to many people during their decision.
No, they don't. Often they are so ashamed. Yeah, that's right. They're so ashamed they don't go and talk. And what we do know from pregnancy counselling services and other services like that, that if women are given impartial counselling, they will, about two-thirds of them, from wanting to seek an abortion, will change their mind if they're talking to someone who isn't buying into the decision. So it's not maybe their mother, it's not their husband or their boyfriend. But they're just given space to look at the alternatives. You know,
and to step back, or to have somebody who steps back and sees it from a neutral point of view.
Yeah, and explores their options and actually gives them informed consent, because they usually have no idea of what's ahead of them, as in the trauma afterwards, the heartache afterwards. And sometimes I don't even dare want to tell them the physical impact that they may suffer, you know, because the emotional stuff is so bad for them. Yeah, and their families deserve to know that, you know, if their 18-year-old daughter's going to have an abortion, she's about seven times more likely to die of suicide in the next year, or 14 times more likely to die of homicide than if she'd carried that baby. Those are just ridiculous statistics, you know, and families have a right to know that so they can actually cut them some slack, you know, and be compassionate. And because many people think, oh, you chose it, it's your decision, get on with it, and that they can't get on with it sometimes. They just can't.
And you mentioned earlier that there was also somebody who does pregnancy counselling in the same committee that you are in.
Yes, yes.
So you work together and you can share experiences in order to help.
Yes, yes. So that helps. I've also been involved with pregnancy counselling for many years. That's how I do it, through pregnancy counselling services.
And how do the young women, or the women in general, how do they know about you?
Me personally, often it might be through referrals, because I've been around a long time now. But pregnancy counselling services, we advertise, and we advertise our post-abortion services as well. So
are there also women who see the pregnancy counselling, but they don't make it, and then they come afterwards to you?
Yes, it's very rare to get someone to come back straight away to us, but the fact that we've given them the truth beforehand and they know we're not going to judge them, that they do feel that comfort zone. In fact, I was calling the other night about a young lass who didn't have very good English skills, and so she just came back, and she would just come back and garden with the elderly woman who'd counselled her, and that was their way of just camaraderie to help them through. So she still felt loved, you know. Mm-hmm. She didn't want to come with her translator anymore, but she still wanted to see the counsellor. Yes, it was a very beautiful story, that one.
And I think many New Zealanders know that in New Zealand, the law says it is legal to have an abortion if two certifying doctors, consultants, agree that continuing the pregnancy would result in serious danger to a woman's mental or physical health. Is that correct?
That is correct, is what the law says. And I think that's probably the drive behind changing the law, because the vast majority of studies around the world show that abortion is incredibly detrimental physically and emotionally. So you can't, that wouldn't stand, because you'd always be able to prove that it's going to be harmful. And, okay, we do get people on the other side saying that it's not harmful and it's just a lot of pro-life stuff. But, you know, they've done mega studies of 877,000 women, you know, from big studies around the world. They put them all together. And the wealth of scientific information certainly says that there's a lot of damage done. I could list them all, but, you know, yes, there is. And the other things, they're like sexual violation or mental subnormality or fetal abnormality. That's discrimination. There still is. There's two people in that situation. There is the child and there is the woman. And that is why the woman grieves, because after the abortion, she knows she was a mother. She never, ever comes grieving a blob of cells. She knows she was a mother. And so you really have to acknowledge that child right from the very start. And that child has its own right to life, regardless of its situation of its conception. Yeah. So, and from my point of view, I've never seen anyone come out from an abortion untouched. So, yeah, I would never be able to say, yeah, I think it's a good option in your circumstance. I'll sit with them, and that's their decision, because I don't have to walk their walk. I never have to walk their walk. It's their decision. But I know in my heart it'll be a painful decision for them, regardless of the happy face they may put on and regardless of how they may have to get on with their life, because they just have to.
And after the counselling with you, what happens with the women? Do they feel relieved, or do they continue grieving?
Well, it does depend on them and how far they want to go. And I do personally believe that if they don't get to the stage where they forgive themselves, they'll never be fully healed, because it's that self-condemnation that eats them up, the self-hatred. Mm-hmm. And that's where we have to get them to. We have to get them, and we have a memorial service for the baby and a naming service. And the whole thing is that I believe, and I can't put that on them because they might be Buddhist or they might not believe in life after death. I've counselled many different religions, so they might don't have the same belief system as me. But that thing of forgiving yourself and feeling forgiven is really important. If they don't believe in life after death, that can also be really, really hard for them to come to peace to. You know, as a Christian, I believe that the aborted children are in heaven with God, because they have no sin.
And as I mentioned earlier, so there should be two certifying consultants or doctors, yeah, who agree in the abortion.
Yeah.
Have you been in touch with any of these doctors? What did they say? If you have a case, you have so many cases, as you say, and most of them women were suicidal. So what do the doctors say when you confront them, or when they are confronted in statistics? You don't have to do that personally, but if you have statistics, what do they say?
To be honest, in that situation, I haven't talked to a lot of doctors who are working in that field. I've dealt with women who are, but no, I haven't talked to doctors and approached them on that. One of the organisations I studied with last year in Canada, he had a program for the healing of medical professionals who'd been in the abortion industry, and he says that many of them feel huge, deep regret. But, and they also, while they're working in that industry, often feel quite ostracised by their peers. I have dealt with family doctors who felt that their patients shouldn't have had abortions because they knew that the abortion would have caused further mental damage, you know.
Because in a way, what you say, it's you see a mental problem afterwards, and that was exactly maybe the reason why it was performed.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, like one young girl who came to me, you know, she came and she said, how come I can find on the internet that this was going to make me worse, because she had a history of mental health issues, and but nobody had told her. You know, she'd had 4 appointments, actually. They did a good job in giving her a lot of time and counselling her, but they didn't actually tell her it could probably make her worse. And she certainly was a lot worse for a long time. But she's good now. She's good now.
So what is the change now? Because people are talking about a change in the law. What is the purpose of the change now?
Well, the talking about taking it out of the Crimes Act, and there's a lot of confusion out there at the moment, because they keep saying that it makes the woman a criminal, and yet the Act specifically says that the woman or girl will never be charged under the Crimes Act. They cannot be considered to be a criminal. The law in the Crimes Act, the reason it's there is to protect women and the baby from doctors who shouldn't be doing abortions in situations where they shouldn't be given them. So it's purely a protective act. And I think it'd be a great danger to New Zealand if they remove it from the Crimes Act, because it's just ignoring, first of all, where people are buying into a lie, which they've been told on the news media and by all sorts of people in political debates. And the truth is that where it is in the Crimes Act is quite fitting, because there are unscrupulous doctors like that one I just mentioned earlier. The family doctor basically told the patient, well, you went to the highest paid abortionist in New Zealand and he gave you bad advice, you know, and that woman was a mess for years. So people like that should be charged, and there haven't been many people charged in New Zealand. But taking it into the Health Act, you know, if they took it into the Health Act, really they should be bringing in true informed consent. And all over the world, wherever they bring in informed consent laws, the abortion numbers drop immensely, because when people actually know the damage that it does, they actually don't want it. And I personally think if people saw what I see of abortion, they would never advise it for their girlfriends or their daughters or their wives. They just wouldn't inflict that kind of thing on someone when they know the long-term impact. But unfortunately, it happens and people panic and they see it as the only option. They really do. Most people think it's the only thing I could do. You know, I had no other choice. And it's completely contrary to what they're told. You know, it's meant to be choice, but it's completely not choice. Yeah.
And it's an emotionally difficult situation.
It's a very emotionally difficult time for them. Their hormones are already going crazy just because it's pregnancy. You know, and they need to be able to give in time.
But then again, if the impact of emotion is so strong, that when we need a good law where we can protect the woman, really, because she will need good consultants.
Exactly, and it is about protecting them, and it's the whole of society, really, because it impacts, you know. It really, truly does. It impacts the grandparents. There's a lot of evidence now that it impacts the children of the aborted woman, what they call survivor guilt. So it's interesting. Do you mind if I just go off on side for a little? So the post-abortion trauma was actually diagnosed when psychiatrists in the States realised that their post-abortive woman clients had the same symptoms as the Vietnam vets. And that's how the early programs were written. They were based around that post-traumatic stress. And certainly myself, I come from Gisborne, and when the book about Dr. Monty Suter did a book on the 28th Maori Battalion, and he talked about the post-traumatic stress amongst the men of the East Coast. And I was in a Rotary meeting that night, and I just sat there thinking, oh my gosh, this is the best I've heard somebody locally explaining what I'm seeing amongst my post-abortion clients, because at that time they were all in Gisborne, you know. And it was really great for me, sounds awful, but it was great for me to understand that correlation about what I'd learned about the Vietnam vets, and I could see it in my own neighbourhood, you know. So with Anzac Day, they were talking a lot about that this year, and I thought, well, it's good that people are beginning to acknowledge all these things, because it's actually the trauma of the death, you know, and it's it's unacknowledged, disenfranchised grief, you know, and it hurts. Regardless of the situation, it hurts.
Because you have an innate sense of protecting somebody.
And especially as a mother. And it just crushes her. You know, it just crushes her. Yeah. And so things like birthdays, Christmas, Mother's Day, anniversary dates are really difficult times. And we often try and we have a like an anniversary plan to try and make those days a bit easier. Yeah.
So when you talked about the changes that are coming up
in the legislation,
is there a submission time?
Yes, we've got a very tight submission time. It's remarkable. The government do seem to be wanting to push this through. The Law Commission, we read the other day how the Law Commission's been working on Relationship Property Act, which impacts on my career, for the last 3 years, and yet this abortion change has been almost bulldozed through. We've got to have submissions in by the 18th of May. So we really do need people writing in and letting people know how they feel about it, because it's going to be a huge injustice to this nation, a huge injustice to the woman, to the families, to the children. And they have to research it, really they do.
Is there a way that people, if they listen to the program, if they're interested in following up or checking out a website, is there anything?
There is a remarkably good website put out by Family First, and they've got 8-page brochures, which they're happy to send out to people for free, I think. I might find Bob McCross Creek giving me growling at me, but he's got a wonderful 8-page booklet. And but you don't have to read that; you can just go onto the Justice Law Commission website, which you can go on as well. Would you like me to read those websites out to you, or
We can put them on the Facebook page?
Oh, thank you.
Page,
yeah, so. But certainly, there's a lot of things out there. Voice for Life have one as well, but I do think that Family First is the best. Yeah.
So we'll put up the links to the different to the different websites. So if people are interested in learning more and informing themselves more,
exactly,
because their submission is 18th, you said
18th of May, which is just around the corner. So you know, and people don't have to worry about doing a big one. They just really need to a paragraph is fine. You know, there will be plenty of really detailed, well researched submissions going through. But you know what we found with the euthanasia ones. I think it's about 21,000, maybe 23,000 first time round, and it's about 35,000 second time round. These are really important issues, and we have to make sure that they don't get bulldozed through. You know, the government seems to have a...
It can concern everybody.
Pardon?
It can concern everybody.
Yes, well, I have to be honest, I see it in tax law. Sometimes we wake up the next morning and there's been new law, and we don't want the same thing to happen here. This is more important than tax.
Yeah, so what would you wish for the future?
Well, I would really, I just, personally, we have a lot of disabled people in our family. I think that should be taken out of the law, that babies can be aborted for being fetal abnormality. There's a lot of those kind of things. Things like rape. Very few women fall pregnant in a rape situation, but statistics say that studies have shown for years about 80% of the women who fall pregnant choose to keep their babies because they've already been violated. They are victims and they want to take control. So that gives them back their power, having the baby. And it brings them healing because that child is still half theirs. It still might have granddad's eyes and, you know, so there's things that they've gotten there which were written. That Act is 40 years old. Yes, we know that. And the British one is 50 years old. But we know so much more now about the humanity of the child in those very early times, and the very fact that the mother grieves a five-week-old fetus, and she might grieve it 5 or 10 years later, you know, it is a human life, and it deserves the same protection as you and I sitting here today, you know? And, as an accountant, the accountant in me, I really did like Bill English's policy last year that he had going for the social cost, looking after the social cost of long-term impacts in society. And I've said the accountant in me is very aware of how tax dollars are spent, and I see it in my counselling with people, but also statistically it comes out that there's a huge correlation, and all these things impact on our welfare state system. So there's a correlation between abortion and mental health problems that's incredibly well documented. There's a correlation between abortion and physical health problems like infertility and cancers and things like that. Correlation between abortion and suicide, as I've talked to you about. And that increased risk of suicide lasts for about 10 years. It's just ridiculous. Not at the same high level. There's a correlation between abortion and death by homicide, as we talked about. There's a correlation between abortion and the higher rates of addiction, like definitely alcohol, marijuana and cigarette smoking, and those are huge in our society, huge problems.
And I think that all these issues regarding abortion, what it can cause and the effects, I think it goes through all parties. There are people who are in favour or against, and some who say I'm not well informed. So the main thing is that people do take an informed decision, and that they inform themselves, go to websites and find out more about and then they decide if they want to write a submission or if they just want to keep it like this.
Yes,
but I do think people have to be informed, especially when it comes to life.
Absolutely. There's another excellent website that's not to do with these, but just would give people information about abortion and its impact, and it's called afterabortion.com. And so if anybody is looking at having an abortion or they know of somebody in their family, it's a great resource because there's lots of scientific studies, but there's also a chat page type thing of people with their abortion stories, and it can bring healing because it's anonymous kind of thing.
Thank you very much, Catherine, for
coming
here. Thank
you so much
here.
For your time. Thank you for making the opportunity available to us.
Thank you.
Okay.
And let's have a look at what is coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center. We'll have Sister Helen Bergen coming on the 10th of May, and that will be the first of a three-part series on the Trinity. So it will be the 10th of May, 17th, and the 24th of May. And on Tuesday, the 22nd May, we'll have another series, a two-part series with Father Neil Derrick. On the 22nd of May, it will be from 7 to 9 p.m. And the second part will follow on the 30th of May. And it is about Laudato Si, and with the title Pray for and with Creation. And our weekend Writers' Weekend workshop with Joan Rosier Jones is to be held on Friday the 25th to the Sunday the 27th of May. And last week I had my interview with Sister Kathleen Rushton. She will facilitate a weekend workshop on the topic Everything is Interconnected, Completing the Works of God. This will take place from the 18th to the 19th of May. And for all events at our center, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238 or via our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. I wish you all a blessed Friday and a good week ahead. Thank you very much, Catherine, and
thank
I hope
so
that you get many submissions.
Thank you.